Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here. This afternoon, as we get going, I want to talk about some of the stuff that's going on with law enforcement in the world at large. First of all, we saw Special Agent Strzok from the FBI testify in front of the Joint House Hearing Committee last week. I have got to tell you, I was very surprised at the attitude that he took and the comments that he made. It seemed to me not only absurd, but how can he continue to defend his actions? The report that came out, the government report that came out and found that he acted in very unprofessional ways. It didn't come so far as to say that his bias, which was crystal clear, had any effect on the investigation, which I think that was a game. It's a game that's being played. The Inspector General's office, he is a Democrat, so I think he had to come out and be truthful, but at the same time, he provided a little cover for his party as best as he can. It was shocking to watch the Democrat members of those committees run cover for him, to try and protect him, to stop lines of questioning, to interrupt. We have an FBI agent and a Department of Justice that went out of its way to interfere with an American election. They keep screaming about the Russian interference. We had American interference on the side of our Department of Justice and high-ranking officials in the FBI. Now, I've made my point clear in the past. I think what happened here is that you had career people in the DOJ and in the FBI who believed very strongly that Hillary Clinton was going to win the election. And when she won the election, she would take these people who did all the right things for her and put them in high-ranking positions. And that would be the payoff for what they did. That in itself is corrupt. To do something, a quid pro quo, especially when it comes to a law enforcement type of thing, like you have an investigation into somebody and you clear them for your own benefit down the road. Now, that hasn't been proven. No one's admitted to that yet. But come on, let's take a look at it on face value. They're looking for collusion with Russia to affect the election. But here we have Hillary, who reached out to this former Russian agent to get that dossier on Trump, which was all made up stuff. She paid the English agent, whoever he was, Steele, to get that information, who then paid Russian people. Isn't that a direct collusion to try and affect the election? It seems clear. Now, Agent Strzok and his female friend, who apparently he had an affair with, they were running an investigation, or he was running the investigation. And when his text messages come out, and to see him sit there on that stand and try and justify that, well, those are all my personal opinions, but they would not affect my work. It's one thing, I think, if he said, my personal opinion is that I think Hillary Clinton would be a better president than Donald Trump. You know, I just think she has more experience. He's an outsider coming in. I think we'd be better hands with Hillary Clinton than we would with an outsider like a Donald Trump. That's one thing. But for him to make the comments he did as though those things weren't real, the bottom line is it came to light. He got caught. Those comments he was making in his private moments that he tried to say, well, it was the middle of the night, I was tired, I was exhausted. No, when his girlfriend said, you know, is he really going to win? And he says, we're going to stop it. And one of the topics that they talked about, that they questioned him, I believe it was Trey Gowdy, said, what do you mean it? What are you going to try and stop? And he danced around this question around and around and around because stop it meant the Trump presidency. And he couldn't say that. So he said all kinds, he didn't remember making Nick's text. He didn't know what the context of this one was. And then he had that ridiculous defense of himself that he's like some great patriot out there doing the right thing. He didn't have mild bias or opinion one way or the other. It was so blatant in those texts and so profound that you would have to be unconscious to not understand what you just saw when we saw those texts come out, to see what they actually mean. That was an attempt to change the course of an election by the Department of Justice and Agent Strzok. And it's funny when he said, you know, everything I did, every decision I made was looked after by people above me. And there was people below me who would never allow such a thing. Well, the people above him, Comey, got fired. McCabe got fired. So who are the people above him? They were just as corrupt. So they let it go. They were all part of the cabal that this was all part of. They didn't think Trump was going to win, and they thought Hillary was, and they were going to have better positions for it. It's really plain and simple. It's crystal clear. The evidence is right there. And watching him testify was really, as a law enforcement officer, I was shocked. I mean, I know he's dancing up there trying to save himself. And that fake indignation that, you know, his entire career. One of the things we learn in interview interrogation school, it's one of the ones I teach, by the way, is that when somebody starts throwing up things to add credibility to what they say, he said he was a FBI agent for 22 years. And I think for 4 years, in addition to that, he was in the military. And I think it's great that he was in the military. We love military people. But that makes 26 years total. So when he's testifying and he's talking about what he did as an FBI agent, he kept throwing in my 26 years, my 26 years. He's trying to gain credibility, or gravitas, as they say, for who he is by throwing in that military. He's trying to get a good feeling out of people by taking the credit for being in the military as part of his answer. He wants you to throw that in the mix when you're thinking of him, that a guy who served his country in the military and then served in the FBI would never do anything like this. Well, we know just from his own words in his texts that it's quite clear. Not only did he do these things, he did them for a purpose, and so did the other people involved. Now I'm going to turn my attention to the Democrats who were there. I didn't see any of them show any interest whatsoever in whether or not this man actually did anything wrong. They were more concerned with how he was being questioned, how he was being talked to and spoken to, how he was being harassed, they called it. We were trying to get to the bottom of things, and he was playing a game. And they were trying to protect him with these comments. How about we just ask the questions? Agent Strzok, you said these things. Let's get to the bottom. What does that actually mean? And when he says he had no bias, it's obviously ridiculous. And then for the one member of the committee, a Democrat again, and I don't remember his name, to come out and say, you deserve a Purple Heart for what you did. A Purple Heart? Because he was questioned very vigorously by people who are outraged? Now, granted, the Republicans obviously see some power in their position, because they have their position is correct. They have uncovered corruption and probably some criminal acts in what these people did, and they're acting very strongly to try and bring that out. Unfortunately, they are being blocked at every turn. The Democrats are blocking it, and just watching what these people did in that hearing, you can only imagine what's going on behind closed doors. So the question is, why doesn't President Trump come forward at this point and just demand that all the documents Congress is looking for be sent over there today? As of today, put them in a box and bring them over there. Well, they have 100 and something agents working on this day and night to gather all these documents over there at the DOJ and the FBI. Well, you've been working on it for months. There must be a couple of boxes that are already filled. How about somebody pick them up and walk over to Congress and drop them off? It's this kind of thing that I guess they think we're stupid or we're not paying attention out here. This is ridiculous. And then you look and you see, again, go back to Strzok's testimony. I'm watching him and he wouldn't answer certain questions. Now, I get it. As a police investigator, I understand you cannot reveal everything about your case. You cannot reveal information about an ongoing investigation. But they're hiding behind that. He was asked a very simple question by Trey Gowdy in the beginning. From the very start of your investigation, whatever day it was, July whatever, until August 10th, how many people did you actually begin in interviewing? Did you sit down with and start interviewing? And Strzok would not answer that question. I can't answer that question by advice of FBI counsel. I can't. And then we saw Chairman Goodlatte come up and say, that's fine, but you're here under oath, and we have every right to investigate this, and I'm instructing you to answer the question. By FBI, and he would answer, by FBI attorney's guidance, I'm not going to answer that question. Well, you either take the Fifth Amendment, which shows that you got something to hide, or you are under oath in front of a committee of the United States House of Representatives. That overrides FBI policy. You answer the question. You've been subpoenaed there. Well, let's strike that. Maybe he wasn't subpoenaed. He said he was there voluntarily. They didn't seem to clear that up. I believe he was there voluntarily. They asked him to come in. Regardless of the fact, you're under oath and you're providing testimony to the legal representatives who have the right to ask those questions. Just because there's an FBI policy that says you shouldn't do it, or an FBI attorney says you shouldn't answer it, doesn't mean you don't answer it when you're under oath in front of an appropriate body. Could you imagine if he went into court and said to the judge, judge asked a question and he says, well, Your Honor, I'm not going to answer that on the advice of the FBI attorney who says I shouldn't answer that. The judge is going to say, I don't care what the FBI attorney says and what the FBI policies are. You'll answer the question. Other than that, you're in contempt. I think part of the problem with getting these answers out of people is, you know, they throw this contempt around. And Goodlatte made it clear to him, if you don't answer the question, we're going to find you in contempt, and that could include a criminal problem. Well, you know what? Ask the questions. When he refuses to answer, cite him with contempt, have him arrested and prosecuted. Then you'll tell everyone else that goes in there, this is not a game, this is not a joke, and I'm talking about both sides, because there will come a time when people on the right, Republicans on the right, will have done something wrong, and they have to answer the questions. And if you can't ask questions and get them answered, we're never going to get anywhere. So they're making this a mockery that we get to play this game. You know, this nonsense, point of order, point of order, point of order. How about we set the rules in advance of what's going to happen so that we can get answers? They had to stop the whole proceedings and go through this whole ridiculous, let's take a voice count. I want a voice count because I want to know who's doing what. All it was there to slow the process down, to change the process, and to obstruct the process. They're obstructing the investigation themselves by not allowing the answers out. What was it that the Democrats didn't want to know? Did they not want to know if this guy Strzok and Page, the other agent that he was having an affair with, or apparently having an affair with, that's what's been reported, didn't they want to know if he did anything improper? Wouldn't they want to have him answer these questions? They keep falling back, too, on the same thing, saying, this is national security. He can't reveal. And you're demanding he answer national security questions. Well, here's what came to my mind. We asked for those texts. When I say we, I mean the United States House of Representatives, because they represent us, the people. So they said, we want to see those texts. And the Department of Justice and the FBI said, first of all, they're gone, they're lost. We can't find them. This is the competent FBI that we know in the Department of Justice. They lost, pretty funny how they lost those really pertinent texts. And everybody was just like, oh, well, they lost the texts. And then suddenly they were found. And then they said they can't release them because it has national security implications. Well, after a battle, we get them back and we find there's no national security implications here. It's embarrassment is what it is. And it proves the conspiracy between the Obama people, the Department of Justice, Comey, and all those other people on the left who were trying to destroy Donald Trump's campaign and then have him impeached as soon as he took office for their own political gains. Made it crystal clear. So every time they turn around and say, we can't release that because it's national security, I can't believe that anymore, because it's been proven that they'll say that. Because that stops everybody. Oh, it's national security. We can't release. And then the Democrats are jumping up and down screaming. They're trying to release information that's national security because they don't want you to be safe. It is such a frustrating game to watch that this is how our government functions. This is the problem. And this is why Donald Trump was elected. I think you talk to any Trump supporter and you'll find some people who are just enamored with the man. Everything about him, they just think it's great. But I think the majority of people that voted for Trump were really voting for something other than that Washington swamp, as it's been called. That these people that just play these ridiculous games. Let's find out what happened. As I've said many times before here on Chasing Justice, if he did something wrong, if he did something inappropriate, let's bring it out. Let's find out about it. But to use this process as a hammer to just hurt him and then hurt really all the people who voted for him to change the course of our country, that is should be the most revealing thing to every American. Unfortunately, and I say this sincerely, unfortunately, when I bring this up to my friends on the left, my family and friends on the left, I say, don't you want to know what went on here? Well, what do you think? It's just a game. Trump's trying to lie. He's trying to hide things. What's he lying and hiding from? The man could step in at any moment and stop this. He didn't. The man could order them to do whatever he wants them to do. He runs the executive branch. The DOJ is under the executive branch. He could order them to do whatever he wants. He could end this investigation tomorrow. Now, he'd have to take the political heat, but he could certainly do it, and he hasn't. He's just gone on with his business. So I see the other day they're saying now, they're adding to it, 12 Russians were indicted for conspiracy to attack. They went after the Democrat computer servers, and they went after all that stuff. Well, I thought we were told that nobody could get into those things. Nobody hacked Hillary's Secretary of State's computers. Nobody could possibly do that. Well, now it looks like they did. So that doesn't that make what she did by taking a homebrew server system and doing official government, top secret government documents on there, and now they're indicting people for hacking that? Doesn't that prove that she put us at risk? Where is the outcry for that? And this is where I'm going to fault the Republicans. Why don't they jump up and down and scream and holler and appoint a prosecutor today to look into that and let's get that rolling? All of these people that want to scream and holler about this Trump stuff, I think there should be investigations the other way. How about this? Let's start a special prosecutor to look into corruption in Congress. Wouldn't that be outstanding? And let him go out there and start to investigate all these Congress people and senators for corruption. So there you go, my little rant for this part of the program. I'm shocked as a law enforcement officer, and I'm upset by what I saw. And I can't believe that so many of my fellow Americans don't see the danger of what's taking place right in front of them. So when we come back, we're going to continue this line of questioning. Later on, we're going to talk to some young people heading off to college, and we're going to talk about safety and security issues going off to college. So you might want to gather up your college-age kids that are heading out and see if they can sit and listen to some of the concerns of these college kids. And we're going to talk about the new safety and security report for schools and businesses. Here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
And welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. So here we are in round two. It's a different kind of neighborhood we're going to have today. The fellas all decided that here in the summertime, they're going to take a little time and spend by the pool, I guess, down by the beach or whatever it is that they do. So I have two wonderful young people with us here, along with our whole theme of safety and security as we start to look towards school, going back to school, businesses, and other types of things in our society. My point in our opening was that people look at security a little bit differently than they do now. So that's why I brought these young people back here. So with me today, I have Marisa Joy. Marisa's been on with us before. She is heading off to college this year. She's an aspiring actress, and she is one of the stars of the movie Wing Girl. Marisa,
hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm glad to have you back. Thank you for coming back on.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
We had a lot of calls last time. People thought you had an excellent points of view, and it was fun to hear from you. And also, we have a young man here, one of the producers of Chasing Justice. He helps me out with some of my technical stuff. We have Mr. Anthony Skanga. Anthony, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. You're heading off to college pretty soon, are you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, we've talked in the past about school safety and security issues, and in the bigger picture, there's really the concerns about random violence, whether it be active shooters at a workplace, at a mall, in school, or we have the lone wolf terrorists that we're all worried about out there, and we're trying to keep ourselves safe. And what's interesting is that you two are both heading off to college, and I wanted to get some understanding from you about how you feel about that, what are your concerns, etc. So I'm going to start with you, Anthony. In the past, we've spoken, and Marisa was telling me kind of how she felt when Parkland happened, Parkland school shooting, is that she watched it live on Instagram with her friend. So you remember that incident? What was going through your mind when you heard about that?
Yeah, I think it was so significant because it was so much live footage of things that had happened on social media, Twitter, Instagram. I think that's why it really like hit home for a lot of people, because most school shootings, you read news reports or whatever, but there was actually footage of students taking footage inside the rooms, and you see, you know, bodies and blood and whatever. So I think that's why a lot of people, you know, took it a lot more seriously.
And that. You and your friends talked about this?
Yeah. Actually, my school, they had, we actually had a town hall meeting with the mayor and past governor, and had a discussion with the 350 students in my grade in the auditorium about, you know, what we can do to prevent these things.
Okay, and what did they talk about? Is there anything that you felt was substantive?
Yeah, a lot about school security, you know, like sort of an airlock at the front door, having to buzz in, you know, officers there, or even undercover officers armed with weapons and things like that.
And as a young person, you know, that comes up a lot now. That's the big hot topic, whether or not there should be armed police officers in the schools. As a young person, how do you feel about having armed policemen in uniform walking around your school? Is that good or bad?
I definitely think it's a good thing. And I think for the purpose of it's a visual thing, you know, it stops people from even thinking about, you know, trying to do something like that because you see them walking around every day.
So it seems like it's a deterrent.
Right, it's a deterrent, yeah, more so than it actually having to, you know, it just by itself.
Sure. Well, one of the things that I think my audience knows this, because I brought it up in some of my articles as well as on the show here, is that in almost every one of these shooting incidents, whether it's a workplace incident or an incident in a school, after the fact, they go back and they interview everybody. And they find out that some people, if not a lot of people, knew that the person who did it was planning it or talking right. about it or saying weird things. Do you find that to be true? Do you find anybody that's ever gotten in trouble in your school for saying these kind of things?
Not particularly in my school, but I definitely think, you know, it is students and whoever job, their job to, if they see something sketchy, to report it, because that'll help, you know, law enforcement and whoever stop these things. Because in Parkland, that shooter in particular was for months, you know, posting YouTube comments and things like that, and no one I reported it, so.
Right, so you think that's an important thing
yes.
for young people to understand.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I always wondered whether or not people in schools would think that that's a really good thing to do or not. What about you, Marisa? Do you think people would be willing to come forward and say something, or maybe not so much?
I think it's really good for people to be willing to come forward. I especially think it's the administration's job to check in on students, because you can't put the responsibility and blame on students and teachers to look for it. People should be higher up looking down to protect the people that they're in charge of.
Sure. What about if you heard somebody saying something, though, you know, I hate everybody here. If I had a chance, I would, you know, I'd kill that guy. Would you go and tell somebody that? How would you do it?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely you can go to a teacher that you, you know, trust and look up to, and then it's their job to bring it to someone higher up, just because
right.
it's not our job to keep ourselves safe.
No,
people
I agree.
Be looking
and
out for
you
us,
you brought up the last time, mm-hmm. and I've spoken about that in a lot of the public public programs I've done where I said, we have to realize it's not our response. It's not your responsibility. It's our responsibility. Mm-hmm. The adults, the police, the administrators of the buildings. Now, didn't you have an incident in your school one time you were telling me about with somebody who made some threats or something? Something happened. How did they handle that? Do you remember that? There was a kid who was saying some things or wrote some things.
I'm sure that there's people. Yeah, there's always things people saying they hate the school, things like that, just for any high school.
Right.
So when that happened, there was a couple kids just talking about how much they hate the school, goofing around like guys.
Right.
And definitely it really concerned a lot of us. So it was easy for me to say something to you and then to get it handled that way.
Gotcha. So that's a good thing. I'm glad to hear from you that both of you, that you would be willing to come forward. And that's starting to become a thing, I think. We all have to understand if we see something. I tell people about their workplaces. In your workplace, there's always somebody that we feel uncomfortable about. If they say something, the kind of threats that are out there. A direct threat is, hey, Anthony, I hate you. I'm going to kill you. That's pretty obvious. When you get a veiled threat, that's the kind of thing where somebody say, you know what, Anthony? Go ahead and keep, talking to the boss behind my back or whatever, and you'll see what's going to happen to you. That's a veiled kind of a threat.
And I also think it would definitely be helpful for people, administration, principals, to make it easier for students to talk about things like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe once in a while have an assembly or something, or just make yourself available to your students. That way they can come to you if they see anything or if they hear anything. Because a lot of principals and higher-ups just really do their own thing and disregard the students a lot. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that in my personal experience. So if they were to be more
attentive
to the students would probably feel much more like able to come forward.
Well, one of the reasons that students give specifically, they say they don't want to come forward because what if they say something and they're wrong? I said something, heard Anthony say something, now the police are involved and I look like a jerk for reporting it. Number two, they don't want to be a rat. They don't want to be the person that's picked on. Oh, your aunt, who called on Anthony? Why did he get in trouble or whatever? And the other one is they don't think there's anyone they can trust, either at home or in school, that they can trust. And when I look into that deeper, it doesn't mean that they don't like their teachers or their parents. It means they can't find somebody they can trust not to overreact. Mm-hmm. Let's just look into it and not go crazy.
Right.
So that's kind of what you're saying. If there was a more of a connection, it might be better. Do you think, Anthony, what do you think if there was an app, an anonymous app? Do you think people would be open to using that? Hey, listen, I heard somebody saying this, that, and the other thing, and send that in?
I definitely think so. That was actually talked about in that assembly that we had at my school, an anonymous app that the police, Brick Police, are working on to, you send in whatever I heard this person, and they look into it on their own and don't make too big of a deal so that you look like a rat or whatever you want to.
Interesting. And this is for our audience listening. These are important points because you're hearing it right from the people that are in the middle of this. Marisa, you think you'd use an app or your friends would use an app?
Yeah, definitely. If we felt the need to, it's always easier to use an app and to look at your phone than it is to actually confront someone. So for kids who feel shy or feel like they don't know what to do, that's definitely an easier thing to do.
Sure. Now, it's interesting. One of our sponsors here, A-Plus Technology out of New York, aplustechnology.com. I'm telling you, go take a look. They have everything for safety and security stuff. But they have an app. It's called Punch Alert. And it goes on your phone and you can tap away on this thing. You can send anonymous messages. You can send alerts to everybody you work with. It's really a fantastic thing. So I'm glad to hear that people have the mindset to use these kind of things. I know for a while there I had set up a tip line in the school that I worked in. But that requires people your age to pick up a telephone. Remember what that telephone is? Not the app on your computer when you walk around. You dial it, Nobody's going to do that, are they? No, absolutely
not. So much easier to use an app.
So much easier to use an app. Okay, so now, do you feel, Anthony, do you feel that there's a threat of danger to you in school going off to college from an active shooter or a random type of a thing?
Well, definitely I think that was a large concern when we looked at schools. Me and my mom, most schools actually, I visited multiple, they put a lot of stress on the safety of their school. You need your student card to get into all the buildings and this and that. So not necessarily, I don't think, because the schools I looked at they seem very safe as far as security level wise, so I don't have too much of a fear of that because, like I said, they seem like they have their security together,
Sure. And that, was that important to you or important to your
mom? Well, it was important to me as well. Also important to my mom, you know, wants me to be safe.
Now, do you have any idea what you would do? Do you have any idea? Have you ever been trained, received? I know you said your school did something about how to prevent it. Have you ever been trained what to do if you found yourself in a situation where all of a sudden you hear shots fired?
Not in in-depth training. The most basic thing we have is a code red. That would be for an active shooter. You go to a corner of the room, the best corner with no, you know, least visibility. The teacher turns off the lights, locks the door, and that's it.
But and besides you kind of hang out there.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, and how about you, Marisa? Have you had any particular training other than what you and I have talked about?
No, not at all. And I think it's really horrible that schools don't go more in depth of for students and teachers what to do, because mm-hmm. I don't even want to get started on the amount that teachers get paid is not enough to have to like have this incredible responsibility of having to protect their students with no training. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really horrible that teachers wake up in the morning, they're parents, and they are people who are loved, and they go to a job where it's not in the job description to have to know what to do if something right. happens at all. And so that's why some of this training would come in so in handy for the students right. and for the teachers.
And it's interesting that you don't really get that training. Here's what I've heard from administrators, because you know I go to schools and I train administrators. I train the staffs that are there. When I bring up the students and I say, you know what, we should do a training for the students, they're almost apoplectic. Oh my gosh, if we talk about that right. kind of thing to the students, you're going to scare them to death. Their parents are going to go crazy. Does that seem right to you?
Honestly, at this point, watching it all happen live, watching kids get, you know, killed and slaughtered in their schools, and knowing that we're in a position, especially in high school, like you're sitting there, you're already scared. So I think teaching kids what to do is smart.
Anthony?
Yeah, I think it's like the same issue with sex ed. A lot of parents are scared to teach, to have sex ed in public schools, but I think it's important for students to be taught about these things. So yeah, if it ever does happen, or they know what to do.
Right. So you might find yourself in the position of being an active shooter. It'd be nice if you knew what to
right,
do.
Exactly.
And there might be sex involved in your life at some point. You right. want to know about it, right?
So either way. I think it's really sad that people want to shield their children from things that they should know. For instance, we take an economics class in school, and to graduate, you have to take that class and pass mm-hmm. it, because so many kids weren't being taught at home how to pay bills, how to manage money, how to save. Right. So the school system basically took that over for the kids' well-being.
Well,
so
it's actually a smart thing.
I think they should take over how to protect yourself.
So it sounds to me like what you're both saying is that while this topic is scary to a lot of people, it's information you need, because you're the ones who are going to have to learn how to survive so that you're not in the middle of those videos, mm-hmm. crawling through somebody's blood where that happens. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you think your friends would be open to that? Or do you know anybody that would be so scared that they couldn't take the training?
I don't think anyone's so scared that they couldn't take the training, just because you get to a point where you're so scared of it happening that you just want to know how to protect yourself.
I think that's very important. And I was just saying in one of the other segments that I just did a very big media outlet, and I did all their employees. And it's the same whether it's that location or any public employee location. I go in and I say, do you people know what to do? And you'd be surprised. It's 2018. People will say, I don't. What would I do? And it's a weird kind of thing. It's like, Anthony, you're saying, you don't really know what you would do. You lock the doors and you kind of hang out. So it would be nice to talk to you people, you young people, and say, if this happens, here's some things you could do. Because it's not a guarantee. Anything, no matter what anybody says, it's not a guarantee. There's a little bit of luck involved. But at least if you know what to do, you're empowering yourself to respond. Reese, you want to say something?
Also, it's kind of controversial, but I've heard a lot of people talking about one of the victims from the Santa Fe school shooting. Was a foreign exchange student who was overseas in America studying. Mm-hmm. And it's just so heartbreaking, because that was a person who wanted to come here and feel safe and get an education that they weren't mm-hmm. offered in their country. So a lot of people are saying that when students come here now, we should make them very aware that our schools are not safe the way they are. Mm-hmm. And there's all these risks that are in American schools right now because not enough's being done.
Interesting. Well, we only have a couple minutes left to this segment, and I really appreciate you two coming on with me. Let's look forward now a little bit. You're heading off to college. Anthony, you're moving into college. You're getting ready to go. You guys are really on your own for all intents and purposes for the first time in your lives. Do you have any safety and security concerns being off on your own? I mean, here you go. Have a nice day, Anthony. See you at Christmas time, probably.
Obviously, there's concerns, you know, don't be in the wrong area of the neighborhood at night or things like that. But, you know, my school is in the city, so, you know, fast paced, fast moving sort of life. So there are concerns, but they're not, you know, too bad. I think
it's not overwhelming.
Yeah, not overwhelming.
But you're aware of it, right?
I definitely am aware, yes.
Right. So I think that's half the whole thing for security is being aware. Okay, you know, you could say, what's a bad neighborhood? And there's all kinds of things. The bottom line is if you got to be able to trust your feelings. If you're walking down the street and you're not comfortable, then you should go somewhere else because that's your senses telling you something's wrong. That's built into us as humans. What about you, Marisa, heading off?
I'm definitely nervous. I'm going to school in New York City, so there's the same concerns that Anthony has. Also, today is my birthday, and I got mace. That was my first present.
You got some mace.
I was super excited to get that, not because I ever want to ever have to use it, but I think it's good to have because you need to really look out for yourself and be careful.
So, well, actually, let's clarify. It's not mace. It's pepper spray. Which is legal. You're allowed to have.
Oh, right. It's fine.
And it's interesting going off to the city. Now, different cities have different kind of rules. So you got to be real careful what you're doing to protect yourself. And I was joking around with you before when I said, you know, you're going to New York, you're not allowed to protect yourself. You'll get in more trouble than the person attacking you. But I think your point is right. You're preparing yourself to be able to protect yourself.
Especially young girls going away to school need to be really aware of what they're getting into.
Absolutely. So at this point, I want to thank our guest, Anthony Skanga and Marisa Joy. Marisa, you have a movie coming out soon, right? You got 10 seconds for me on what's the movie?
It's called Wing Girl.
And how do I get to a website or something to look at it?
You can go to winggirlmovie.com.
Winggirlmovie.com.
It has clips, bloopers, everything like that.
All right, everybody. So listen, be careful going out to college. Enjoy yourselves. The whole world is out there in front of you, but be safe and secure. And for all the adult listeners out there, listen to what these young people just said to you. They want to be trained. They want to know what to do. And it's our responsibility to keep them safe. So we'll see you back in segment number 3 here on Chasing Justice. I get confused when I have all these wonderful people around. So we'll see you in segment 3 on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
The Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. Here, round 3. Bing, 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 bing. I think we found it interesting listening to those young people talk about heading off to school. And one of the things I did want to talk about is safety and security of our schools and our businesses and our public places is finally starting to take a front row seat in our consciousness. It's taken a while to kind of get here. But I think if you take a look at the America Out Loud website at AmericaOutLoud.com, you'll see that some of the articles and the stories from the many very talented writers and radio hosts that are on there, you'll start to see that this topic is beginning to pop up more often. And even in the bigger, wider mainstream media that's out there, the CNNs and the Fox News and all this, you're seeing more and more stories about safety and security as we see more and more incidents taking place. People are no longer putting it out of their mind, but I think people are open to, okay, what can we do here? And that's what I want to talk about a little. So having those young people on to talk about their concerns of going off to college, I think was important for all of us to hear, because these are the kids that are going. These are our children that are heading out there. And just like I said after the Parkland school shooting, it is our responsibility to keep them safe. It's not their responsibility. As the parents, the police, the administrators, it is our job to make sure that our campuses, our schools, if you're a business owner, that your business is safe and secure for your employees. We cannot anymore rely on the idea that, you know, the most dangerous statement in the world I say all the time is, it will never happen here. That is absolutely the most dangerous thing anybody could ever say. I think if you went and looked, if you went to Sandy Hook Elementary School and you asked them the morning that that school was attacked, do you think the worst, most horrific school shooting ever was going to take place in your school this morning? They would say no. It'll never happen here. It's a bucolic little community. It was very nice. They did some things for safety and security, but still they were the victim of one of the most horrific attacks ever. Even more relevant in timing, if you had gone to the Capital Gazette in Maryland and if you had asked them, hey, do you ever think you'd be attacked here? You probably would have gotten a no, it will never happen here. Who's going to attack us? So I think it's starting to really take its place. And here we are in the you know, the hot and hazy days of summer as we're moving through. For me, and as you know, I've told you before, I do training for schools and businesses. I do threat assessments. We are starting to see at this point of the year that September, or late August, if your kids start school in late August, as some parts of the country they do, late August, September, the next school year is looming. The college season is going to be starting up. It's less than, 5 weeks, 6 weeks till some of these kids are heading off to college. So the new things are coming along. There are a lot of materials out there for you to read. There's a lot to try and learn about school safety and security. What I find, and I find this all the time as I go out and I do threat assessments on schools and businesses, is that people are now interested in, okay, what can we do and how do we do it? They need guidance in this. And while the written material is really good, and I do suggest people read it, you can learn a lot from the written material. The reality is people need to hear from someone. They need to hear from somebody who's experienced in this to answer questions live, to be able to respond and provide background information for how these things take place. So there's a program that I do. There's a couple of programs that I do when I go out there. One of them is called Is Your School Ready? Well, it's the same thing. Is your business ready? The programs are depending on who my audience is. And basically, I ask that question. Are you prepared to respond to violence in your school, in your workplace, at your movie theater, wherever it is? And the answer that I get almost every single time is that people will say, well, we know that there's a danger. We're not sure how much of a danger it is. But hey, Joe, what exactly can we do? And you would think at this point in time that most people would have read all that material and they would have a pretty good idea of what they can do. The reality is they don't. And I know that there's lots of police departments that are out there that offer free threat assessments. And, you know, some of the officers that do it are extremely talented and their programs are really great. Other officers don't have all the training or the experience in it, and they're doing the best that they can. It's better to get some information than to get no information at all. But that's why I do the programs that I do. And I try to bring this information to you here today, here on Chasing Justice, because I'm trying to help people. So let's talk for a couple minutes. One of the things I say is when you look at the number of active shooter incidents, the real number of active shooter incidents where someone targets people to kill them, is somewhere between 10 and 25 actual incidents per year in the country. Now we look at that and we say, well, didn't a report come out recently that says there's 180 active shooter incidents since Parkland? Those numbers are skewed a little bit and some people are trying to be sensational. What it is that if somebody was in the parking lot of a business and they had a gunfight for whatever reason, they're not employees, that's it. If there's people that are in a neighborhood where a school is and they end up shooting on the playground at each other, not at the children, that's considered an active shooter incident or a shooting in a school. If a police officer drops their gun and the gun goes off, they're considering that a shooting. They're also considering suicides that take place in these locations as shooter incidents. I'm looking at the type of incidents where someone, under the definition of an active shooter, that's a person or persons who have made it clear through their actions that they intend to kill as many innocent people as they possibly can, usually with a firearm. That's an active shooter incident. We have between 10 and 20 of those, I guess maybe 25, it depends on your actual, and the year, because it varies from year to year. So what is it exactly? Our threat level, if it's only 25, and look at how many millions of locations there are in our country. The reality is, the number, based on the number, is that your chances of ever being involved in an active shooter incident in a school, a college, a business, or workplace, or other place, is really very, very small. The chances are tiny in reality when you look at it that way. But every time I go out to speak, at part of my program, one of the things I do is I reveal these statistics and I explain to people what actually goes on in an active shooter incident. What are the things that really take place based on the historical record? And I ask the question every time. I say, so you know you're not, your chances now are really very low. Can somebody please raise your hand and tell me right now when and where the next active shooter incident will take place? And I call that out to you, my beloved audience here on Chasing Justice. Can you tell me when and where the next active shooter incident will take place? Because if you can, and somebody lets me know, I'll go there and I'll be a hero because I'll stop it when it happens because I'll know it's coming. Well, I've been asking that question for over 10 years to all my audiences. And to this day, I have never had anybody raise their hand to tell me, nor has anybody ever called in to tell me here's where the next one will be. So when you look at it in that light, even though the numbers say your chances are very small, based on that fact that no one has ever been able to tell me when and where the next one is going to be, the chances are actually 50-50. It either happens to you or it doesn't. So if you're walking around and you're saying it'll never happen here, you might want to rethink that because you never know when and where these things are going to erupt. And the whole key to this is that we cannot walk around in our lives being paranoid and scared to death that something like this is going to happen. Instead, we have to be aware and prepare. We can't be paranoid. Otherwise, we would never be able to function. So being aware and prepare, what that means is you have to look at the risks at your facility, your school, your business, wherever it is, figure out what are the actual risks here. And risks can be broken down to two specific points, the internal threat and the external threat. The internal threat is probably the most dangerous, whether it's a school or a business, because the internal threat comes from our coworkers and the students we go to school with. All right, this is the kid who's in middle school, high school, whatever, and is maybe has some mental illness that's diagnosed or undiagnosed. Maybe he's got some other problems or she's got some other problems, because girls are part of the fix, though their number is usually very small. When you look at the data in the active shooter database, you'll see about 96% of shooters are male and 4% are female. Now that number jumps back and forth very little bit, but that's about it. 96% male, 4% female. So our shooter at work or our shooter in the school is somebody probably in the building with you. And when I say to schools, I say, do you use metal detectors? And most schools do not use metal detectors. Do you check backpacks? They do not check backpacks. Do they check your stuff coming into your workplace? Well, in some workplaces, they do have metal detectors, and they do have guards, and they do have people doing those kind of things. But for most of us, our workplaces don't have those kind of security features. We simply come to work, and our children just go to school. So when parents and other people ask me, wouldn't it be a great idea to have metal detectors in front of the school? I say, it can't hurt to have a metal detector, because then you would you'd be able to probably spot the weapons going in and you could stop them at that point. Here's the concern, and here's something that you need to think about. If you have a metal detector in the front of your school, and you have a large school where you got several thousand students coming in, think of how long it takes you to get on an airplane. So you got all these kids coming through a metal detector line. You need to have people trained to run those metal detectors. You need people trained how to wand them and further investigate if somebody signals on the machine that they may have something on them. Then you need people who have to learn how to react if there's a problem. You got to make sure it's all on camera because people are going to accuse the guards of touching people and all kinds of other things. Not only that, but here's another thing I considered. Say you have 10 doors going into your school and you decide you're going to put metal detectors on 10 of them. Okay, they're about $5,000, $6,000 each. Then you need 10 people at least to be working each metal detector, if not two people. So it's a manpower issue, which of course costs money, as well as the equipment for the metal detectors. Now, if a kid comes to school and he decides he's intent on shooting people, and that line backs up, he's going to get caught going through there with his gun. Why not just take the gun out of the backpack? Everybody's queued up right there. waiting to get in line, to go through the line to get into the school, why not just shoot everybody right there? So what we think we're solving a problem, on one end, we're creating another one. People that have the intent to hurt us are difficult to deal with because they are our coworkers, they are our students in our school. So when I talk about the internal threat, the thing to do is to understand what I call the temperature. What is the temperature of your workplace, the temperature of your school? The temperature of your workplace or school means what's going on with the people in your building. Okay, do you have someone who is upset? Do you have a complainer? Do you have someone who's fascinated with weapons? Do you have someone who feels like they are picked on? When we look down at in Maryland, when that guy, and I don't like to mention the shooters' names, I like to remember the victims, when that guy attacked the newspaper down there, he was someone who felt that he was victimized by the newspaper. They wrote an article about him or a couple of articles or whatever. He sued them and he lost, and he was aggrieved. And he felt that they had done him wrong. So he decides to attack the people in the paper. Did they know in advance that that guy was upset? I think they did. I think my article last week on America Out Loud Radio Network was, can we spot violence before it erupts? Well, these people usually make themselves known. They'll argue, scream, and holler. They have behavior issues that we can identify. Just like the students. Students don't wake up on a Tuesday or Wednesday morning and decide they're going to go in and shoot their classmates. They've been having problems for a while. They have said things. They have written things. They have drawn things that people can pick up on. And all of these things you can receive training on. You can learn what to look for. So that's our internal threat. We need to know what's going on with these people. When we hear things going on, do we tell anybody? I recently just did a major media facility. They called me in to do Surviving the Active Shooter program that I do for businesses. And this is a major media outlet in the Northeast. And the reason they called me in is because they're very similar to the Capital Gazette down in Maryland that was attacked. And their employees were concerned about this because, you know, it's a potential. So they brought me in and I asked that question. I said, you know, what do you do if you find someone saying things inappropriately? If you hear people that are saying veiled threatening things? A veiled threat is kind of like, if this happens again, you'll all see what's going to happen here. Somebody says something like that, that's a threat. You need to at least look at it and see what's going on with this person. So that's the whole idea with the internal threat. You have to pay attention to the temperature, what people say, what they do, and there's specific training that people can get. You can get administrators, workers, everyone can get trained on what to listen for, how to set up a mechanism so that you can tell somebody about this danger. The other kind of threat we have is the external threat. These are the people from outside that attack us. The Sandy Hook shooter, this guy was an exterior threat. He attacked the building. The guy in Maryland at the newspaper, it was an exterior threat. He wasn't an employee. He went to the facility and he attacked the facility. So some of the things we look at are, how do you harden your facility? Are there things you can do that do not cost millions of dollars? And there are. The guy down at the Gazette, he walked in the front door that was unlocked and unguarded. First place he went is, as he went up the hallway, there was a doorway, an exit doorway from the interior of the building that emptied into that hallway, and he barricaded it. Why was nobody watching that hallway to see somebody barricading a door? He then went up the hallway, and when he went to go into the office, which I'm assuming that the door was locked because he shot out the glass, and the glass dropped. Well, there's lots of things you can do with that glass to try and slow someone down. And my view on all of this, surviving the active shooter, school, business, whatever, is that time equals life. The longer we can survive without getting hurt, the longer we can survive until we can get police on scene or armed security to attend to the active shooter, the more chance we have of living. So time equals life. We have to slow these people down and keep them away from us so they can't hurt us. So there's things you can do to harden your building to keep it safe. You can provide your people with training so they have some idea what to do if one of these violent incidents erupts in the workplace. You know, the three pillars was another article that appeared here in America Out Loud Radio Network that I wrote. The three pillars of survival, right? That's preparation. That means training, physical hardening, getting your people ready, preparation, communication. How do you talk to each other to let everybody in the building know something's going on? And then notification. How do you call for help to get the cops on the way to help you? Okay, these are the three things, the three pillars of survival. So if you continue to read my column that comes out here on America Out Loud Network, you'll see there'll be more articles in the future about this. If there's anything I can do to help you, you can always reach out to me. So I want to thank everybody for giving me this time today. It's jpangaro.com is my website. You can find me on Facebook under Chasing Justice. You can certainly reach out at 732-600-8976 if I can be of any service to anybody out there. And remember, don't be a part of the problem. Be a part of the solution. And we'll see you soon back here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio.